The funeral of Aggie Feckles was an emotional, gut-wrenching time for all. Midway through the ordeal, Martha collapsed and had to be carried back to the doctor's office. Young Elias Brown had a very difficult time fighting back his tears. Just as the earth was being shoveled into the hole, smoke cut his eyes and looked toward the north. Plumes of smoke were billowing into the sky.
Brown?
Yes, Smoke?
Oh, no. That's gotta be my farm.
Max is burning you out. Come on, let's ride!
They were too late, of course. It was miles to the collection of farmhouses and barns and other outbuildings. Brown had been completely burned out. Gatewood lost his house, but the other buildings were intact. Cooter had lost his barn and smokehouse. Boland's house was gone, and Morrison and Carson lost barns and equipment. All the farmers' cows and hogs had been shot, chickens scattered and trampled.
God damn, a man who would do this! That sorry son will not run me out. We'll rebuild.
And we'll help you.
Your credit is good at my store, Mr. Brown, for as long as it takes.
And I have money put back. I'm good for loans.
Sally and Victoria had ridden out in a buggy.
Smoke?
Yes, Sally.
Smoke, I'm going to wire our family's board of directors back east. I think it's time Barlow had a bank. I'll get the first steps in motion this afternoon.
Good, honey. That's a great idea.
Your wife owns a bank?
Her family is one of the richest families in the nation. They own factories, banks, shipping lines, railroads, you name it. If Sally says put a bank in Barlow, a bank will be put in Barlow. Now, Jim.
Yep?
Let's go pick up some tracks and see where they lead to, as if we didn't know.
But the direction the marauders took did not lead to Hell's Creek. They went north for a couple of miles, then cut toward the northeast, toward the Flathead Range and Glacier Country.
What's up there, Jim?
Man, that is rugged country. I understand they's talking in Washington about making a big chunk of it a national park. About 1 million or so acres. The weather's unpredictable as hell. Storms can blow in there, even in the summer. So I'm told, dropping temperatures 50, 60 degrees. There's mountains in there over 2 miles high and impassable.
You've been in there?
I've been on the edge of it several times. Continental Divide runs right through it.
Anything between here and there?
Trading posts are sort up ahead and a hungry horse. Pretty salty old boys hanging around in there.
We'll follow these tracks as long as we can. We'll supply at the post. The nick in that shoe is a dead giveaway. That'll hold up in court.
You plan on bringing him back?
Not if I can help it.
The country was so rugged and unsettled that the men could not make the trading post that day. They stopped along the creek.
This seems to be as good a place as any to stop and get some food.
What are you doing?
About to get us some food. Get a fire going.
Well, okay. We don't have any fishing rods or nothing. How are you supposed to catch a fish?
Simple. You just catch one.
With your bare hands?
I was raised by mountain men, Jim. A very independent and self-sufficient bunch.
Yeah, I met a couple of real old men who was mountain men. I saw something in their eyes that made me back off and talk right respectful to them.
Wise thing to do. A mountain man isn't going to take much crap from anybody. Here you go.
Whoa!
Take care of that one. I'll get another one. You done with the fire yet?
Hey, gum it one thing at a time.
They started off early the next morning, following the tracks left behind. Both men had taken off their badges, had dusty clothing from the trail, and had not shaved that morning.
So, who runs this trading post we're coming up on?
Don't know no more. Man by the name of Smith used to run it. Well, he might still. Smith ain't his real name. He's a bad one. Have to be bad to run a place like that. Got him a graveyard out back of hard cases who tried to steal from him and brace him over one thing or another.
Fast gun?
Nope. Sawed-off shotgun.
Don't need to be fast with that.
Duh. And he don't hesitate none using it, neither. Got the worst whiskey you ever tried to drink. I think he adds snakeheads to it for flavor. And I ain't kidding.
I think I'll stick with beer.
That would be wise.
If Smith is still here, is he going to recognize you?
Probably. Well, he ain't going to say nothing except howdy until he figures out what I might be up to. How are we gonna play this?
You just follow my lead.
I was afraid you were gonna say that.
The men put their horses in the big barn behind the long, low trading post and unsaddled them, carefully rubbing them down and giving them a good bait of corn. Then Smoke lifted the right rear hoof of each animal until he found the one with the chipped shoe. From there, they went into the bar part of the trading post and walked up to the counter. In this case, it was several rough-hewn boards atop empty beer barrels. Smith flicked his eyes to Jim, and they narrowed in recognition.
Hey, howdy, boys. What might your poison be today?
Beer, for both of us.
Both Smoke and Jim inspected the heavily armed men sitting at two pulled-together tables near a dirty window at the front of the bar room.
There you go, boys.
And been up here in a long time. Forgot how purty this country is, how chilly the nights get.
Oh, it do get airish at times. I got fresh venison stew on the stove, and my squaw just baked some bread.
Sounds good. Jim?
I could do with the taste. Them cold fish we had for breakfast didn't nearabouts fill me up.
Smoke and Jim took their beers to a table across the room from the arsonists.
You know, I think they might find us awful suspicious if we start whispering real obvious.
I think that's a good idea. They might think we're talking about them.
Hey! What are you two a-whispering about over there?
Smoke looked at the outlaw just as the stew and bread was being placed on the table.
None of your damn business.
None of my...
Let it alone, sonny. They ain't worth our time.
I ain't so sure about that. I seen that face afore.
Yeah, that's Murtaugh and Sonny, Jim. Watch your step. They're all baddins.
Oh, and now the damn barkeep's whispering.
Hey, it's my goddamn store, lunkhead. I'll whisper anytime I take a notion to.
What you calling a lunkhead, yo? Go.
You big mouth son of a bitch.
Smith reached behind the bar and came around with a sawed-off shotgun in his hands.
Now then, shit for brains. You got anything else you like to say to me?
I reckon not.
Good. That's just dandy. Use your mouth to eat and drink, and stop flapping that thing at me.
With a scowl on his ugly face, Sonny turned away, but not before giving Smoke another dirty look. The stew smelled good and tasted even better. The bread was lavishly buttered, and Smoke and Jim fell to eating.
Hey, bring us some of that stew.
Dollar a bowl, boys.
A dollar a bowl. Hell, man, that's plumb unreasonable.
Then go hungry.
Hey! I'll take another bowl. This is fine eating.
You better see the color of his money before you dish up any more grub to him. He don't look like he's very flush to me.
Oh, you worry about your own self, Murtaugh. I got money, and I earned it decent.
You saying I ain't decent?
You said that, not me. Now hush up, I'm trying to eat.
Maybe you think you're hoss enough to shut me up?
Well, just as soon as I finish eating, mister.
Anybody bust up furniture, they pay for it.
They started this war of words. All we did was come in for a drink and some food.
That's right. Sad state of affairs when a man can't even eat without having to listen to all sorts of jibber-jabber from lunkheads.
Now, I ain't putting up with no saddle bum calling me a lunkhead. Now, I better hear some apologies coming out of that mouth of yours, cowboy.
Jim grinned up at him. His right hand was holding a spoon, but his left hand was out of sight.
Hang on. Now, let's see what I can do. There's your apology, big mouth. Catch it and carry it back across the room with you.
That's it.
Jim anticipated the punch and ducked it, coming out of the chair ready to fight. Murtaugh bent over to hold his stomach, and Jim took the opportunity to grab the man by his hair. He slammed Murtaugh's head down onto the table.
Oh, now look! You spilled my stew! You boys best look after him. He can't seem to take care of himself at all.
Sonny looked around. Smith was holding the greener, hammer's back, pointed at him.
Oh, and Smith, get the money for my stew from Murtaugh. It was his head that spilt it.
I'll be damned!
Jim picked up his chair. Murtaugh hit the floor on his back and didn't move. His face was bloody, and several teeth had departed his mouth to take up residence on the floor.
That does it! Smith, you gonna take a side in this?
Smoke stood up, brushing back his coat, exposing his .44s.
Stay out of it, Smith. We're deputy sheriffs from down Barlow way. These men are wanted for arson and destruction of livestock. Any damage to your place will be taken care of.
Yeah, that's fair. I knew Jim and you looked familiar to me. Who you be, mister?
Smoke Jensen.
Sonny suddenly looked sick, and so did the other four with him.
Holy shit.
We ain't done nothing to nobody, and we ain't destroyed no livestock.
One of Murtaugh's buddies jerked iron. Smith was already on it. But that started it. When the dust and bird droppings from the ceiling and all the gun smoke began to clear the room, three arsonists were dead, one was not long for this world, and Murtaugh was again trying to sit up, blood from a broken nose streaming down his chin. Sonny was leaning up against the wall, his shoulder pouring blood.
Woo-hoo! That was invigorating. Things is getting plumb boring around here. Them no goods really burned some folks out.
Five families, all good people. I suspect Big Max Huggins paid them to do it.
I'll talk. It was Big Max who paid us to do it. I'll testify in court.
They all turned to see Murtaugh holding the smoking gun.
What did I tell you about talking, you goddamn...
Smoke put a solid kick to Murtaugh's head.
Damn it! That Murtaugh just can't stay down.
Give me some money for the window and mirror from these deceased fellers' pockets, and then you give whatever else is left to them folks that was burnt out. Is that fair?
Plenty fair. The families will thank you.
Smoke tied Murtaugh's hands behind his back with rawhide and straightened back up.
We'll help you bury this trash, Smith. Then I'll get a signed statement from you attesting to the fact that you heard Sonny confessing as to who paid them. You won't have to appear in court.
Good enough. Shovels in the back.
After paying their bill and getting supplies for the trip back to Barlow, Smoke and Jim went through the pockets of the dead men.
I found some coins here. Must be close to $100 on this one. What's that bring us to?
Altogether, a little over $500 between a lot of them.
Well, that'll help them rebuild for sure.
It will. Might as well bring the horses and guns with us, too. Get them started up again right.
Soon afterwards, Judge Garrison sat in his chambers reading the signed statement from Smith.
Will that hold up in a court of law, Judge?
It will in my court. Besides, both you and Deputy DeGone heard the one man confess, too. Don't worry, Smoke. Just remember the name of the town the jury's going to be picked from.
That's true. Any further word about Max Huggins' background?
Yes, but unfortunately we can't use any of it. Some of the parties involved are still too frightened to testify. Others have moved away or died. While the authorities east of here know Max is guilty, they can't prove it.
But Max doesn't have to know that, Judge.
Well, what do you... Ah, of course, you're quite right.
Let me think about how we can use this information, Judge. We've got Max bumping from side to side now. Let's see if we can keep him that way.
Good idea. I have trial scheduled to start Thursday for those who tried to shoot up the town. I want extra security, Smoke.
You got it, Judge. How about Melvin Malone's case?
His is the first one I try. This is unusual for me, Smoke. But I want to ask your opinion. I can put him in jail. I can put him to doing community work. Public service work, it's now being called. But putting him to work cleaning the streets is only going to anger him further. Jail? Probably do the same thing. Or I can fine him. What do you think?
The boy wants to kill me so bad now it's like a fire inside of him.
Is he good?
He makes the mistake that so many would-be gun handlers make. He hurries his first shot. I was born blessed with excellent eye and hand coordination, Judge. The speed came with years of practice. I still practice. But I think the thing that keeps me alive, or has kept me alive all these years, is that I'm not afraid when the moment comes. I'm confident without being overly so. So as to your original question, fine him and let him walk for all I care.
It might buy us more time, if you know what I mean.
I do. Kill Melvin now, and Red is very likely to blow wide open. This town has grown stronger every day. In another 2 weeks, it would take an army to overrun it.
That's correct. And we owe it all to you.
No, no. I just propped you people up, that's all. You all did the rest. See you around, Judge.
Smoke stepped out of the judge's chambers and walked the streets of town, heading for his office. people smiled and waved as he passed.
No doubt about it. These folks are ready to fight for their town. They're probably gonna have to do it too. Very soon.
Hey, Smoke.
Morning, Sal. Have the prisoners been saying anything?
Oh, usual. Threatening us, the town, you know.
Anything specific?
Well, they all been boasting about us not keeping them for very long. I've been doing some thinking about that. I think someone's gonna spring them after they've been sentenced.
From the jail, you think?
I don't know. I'd guess so. Max or Red ain't gonna take a chance of busting them away from the prison wagon when they come to haul them off to the territorial prison. That'd bring too much heat on Max, and he don't want that. So, yeah, I'd say they'll make their try just after these hard cases are sentenced.
We have until Thursday to make some plans. The judge has requested extra security, so he thinks something is in the works, too.
Pete Akins hitched at his gun belt.
Max could have at least 75 men ready to ride in 10 minutes. He could pull 50 more in here in 2-3 days. Folks in this town are good people, and I mean that. I never did none of them no harm, and they know it. They've accepted me. But they ain't gun hands, Smoke, if you know what I mean.
Smoke knew exactly what he meant. Most of the men were good shots with a rifle, but few of them had ever killed a man close up. They had fought in the war, but that was, for the most part, a very impersonal thing.
How many men does Red Malone have on the payroll?
30. Pays them all fighting wages, and there ain't no backup in none of them.
So we're conceivably looking at anywhere from 100 to 150 men.
Or more.
Then that's his only option. He's got to try to destroy the town. Killing me alone won't stop the movement now. He can't let Sally's people start up with this proposed bank. That would bring the state and, in some cases, the federal government into it, if anything were to happen to it.
Maybe there's another way to look at that, Smoke. Maybe Max wants the bank to start up. Rob the bank, destroy the town, and haul his ashes out of the area and start up somewhere else. You can bet he has someone in this town feeding him some information.
Feeding him information? Who?
It could be anybody who's hard up for money.
Hell, that could be any one of 100 people. Now, let me tell you about Max. He's sneaky. He has one ear to the ground all the time. He hears about somebody seeing somebody else's wife, he holds that over their head. Finds out about somebody being wanted, say, back in Ohio, he uses that for leverage. He might have loaned someone in this town money when he first come here. Money's tight right now. Maybe they couldn't repay him like they said they would. Man, he could have had half a dozen people in this town feeding him information.
Smoke turned and looked out the window. It might be Jerry at the saddle shop, Lucy at the hotel, the boy down at the stable, one of the farmers scattered around this end of the county, one of Joe Walsh's hands. Then it came to Smoke, but he kept his suspicions to himself, hoping they would not prove true. He left the office and walked over to the hotel. He sat with Sally for a long time in their suite, talking, exchanging ideas. At first, she thought his suspicions to be perfectly horrible. But then, gradually, she began to agree. When Smoke left, both he and Sally wore long faces. Smoke walked the streets, looking hard into the face of every man and woman he passed. He didn't see it at first, because he wasn't looking for it. But as he spoke and waved to another citizen heading out of town, the family resemblance was just too strong to ignore. There it was, staring him right in the face and saying good morning to him.
You have to be joking.
No, I'm 99% certain. It has to be, Judge.
The judge frowned and pictured the two.
Oh, now that you mention it, I can see it. My God, I would never have put it together. This was all a sham on this person's part.
Looking back, it all went down too smoothly, with no arguments.
And what do you propose to do about it at this time?
I don't know. He doesn't appear to be a bad person. Rather likable, actually. Let's just sit on this for the time being, Judge. See what develops.
Just between us?
You, me, and Sally. And another thing. Sal thinks there's going to be an attack, and soon. Right after the sentencing. That'll give him enough time to round up as many men as he can.
Yes. They wouldn't want to attack the prisoner wagon from the territorial prison. That might bring the state militia down on their heads. They'll strike here, Smoke. Bet on it. We just have to be ready for it.
We'll be ready. I'm going to deputize all of Joe Walsh's hands and Brown and Gatewood and the other farmers in the area, just in case Max tries a diversion to pull me out of town.
That's a good idea. If trouble comes in the way of a diversion north of town, Brown and his friends could then legally handle it. Same with trouble south of town. I'll draw up papers making them full deputies. That'll make it official and part of the record.
The trial going to be in the new civic building?
Yes, I expect a large crowd to attend. Oh, by the way, the Marbley's dog had puppies about 6 weeks ago. Mrs. Marbley said to tell you to stop by and pick one out for Lisa Turner.
I'll do that right now. See you, Judge. Hello, Victoria. I've got something here for Lisa.
Is that for her?
Mommy? I heard some barking.
Hi, Lisa. Marbley over at the general store thought you should have this.
It's a puppy! It's a puppy! Oh, can I hold it?
Here you go.
Oh, she's so cute! Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Mama, Mama, can I keep her, please?
Marbley says she's weaned and paper trained already.
Of course, honey. Now head on back to play if you want.
Thank you.
Now that was a good thing you did there, Smoke.
It's the least we could do for her. Is your husband here?
Oh, no. He's out on a call in the country. He left early this morning and said he wouldn't be back until late. He wanted to check on the families who were burned out.
Anything serious?
Not really. One of the kids came down with chicken pox and gave it to all the other kids who hadn't as yet had it. A lot of them are having an itching good time.
Smoke grimaced, remembering his own bout with chicken pox as a boy back in Missouri.
Are you expecting trouble when the trial starts, Smoke?
I won't lie to you. Yes, I am. Either during the trial or just after the sentencing. Security will be tight. Are you planning on attending?
I don't know. I doubt it. I don't want Lisa to have to hear all that. There will probably be some pretty rough language at times. And if I went, I'd have to leave her alone, and I won't do that.
I think that's wise. Sally isn't going to attend either. I'll ask her if she'll come over and stay with you. If there is trouble, Sally can handle a six-shooter with either hand and won't hesitate to use one.
Trial probably lasts 2, maybe 3 days. Take a good 2 weeks for the prison wagon to get around to picking up the boys. By that time, the bank will be operating. We hit the bank, loot the town, lift us some petticoats, and have some fun with the women. And then we strike out for greener pastures. What do you think, Max? And Max?
Max wasn't listening to Val Singer. He was thinking about Smoke Jensen. For 3 weeks, the big man had been exercising, running several miles a day, working out. He might not be able to beat Smoke Jensen with a gun, and that was up for grabs, for Max knew he was one of the best with a short gun. But there was no damn doubt in Max's mind that he was the better fighter of the two. But how much time did he have? His informant in Barlow had sent him word that Judge Garrison and Smoke Jensen were gathering up old arrest warrants on him from his days back east. 2 or 3 weeks might be cutting it very close. And his informant had also told him that old warrants were being looked at against Red Malone. If the authorities back east came through, the rancher would have to run with Max. And Max knew that Red would never agree to that. Red would stand his ground and die with a six-shooter in his hand. He was too damn bullheaded to do anything else. Finally, Big Max turned his attentions to the group of outlaws in his office.
Boys, we're out of time here. Smoke Jensen has beaten us. Red may not see it that way, but I do. Smoke has used fists and guns to bring civilization to our doorstep.
Max eyeballed the group one at a time. Val Singer, Warner Frigo, Dave Poe, Alex Bell, Sheriff Paul Cartwright.
We're all wanted men. Maybe not under the names we're using now, but wanted nevertheless. 2 or 3 weeks is going to be cutting it awfully close, but I understand that's the way it's going to have to be. Monies have to be in the bank before we hit the town. To hell with those in jail. If we can get them out during the raid, fine. If not, that's all right, too. But the next problem is, where do we run to?
Well, I can't go to California. I'm wanted there.
I can't go east. I'm wanted in 6, 7 states.
Damn it, you're all wanted somewhere. Fine. We'll pick a place to meet after the raid and divvy up the loot and then split up. And boys, I shall be personally leading this raid.
Boss, you've masterminded a lot of raids, but I'd never known you to lead one. What's up?
I have plans for a certain lady in that town. I want her to know a real man just once in her life, just before I kill her.
Well, now, if you're going to be dragging some squall and petticoat around with you, I think it's best we do split up. Are we going to have enough money to divvy it up and buy the best women in any crib in the world?
I've only got my eyes on one woman.
Who? Doctor's wife? Victoria Turner?
Nope. Her name is Sally. Sally Jensen.
The trial of the outlaws and the arsonist went off without a hitch. Judge Garrison had handed down the toughest sentences he could under the law, and the territorial prison was notified. The returning wire said it would be 2 to 3 weeks before the wagon could come and pick him up. Smoke had noticed the now familiar buggy rolling out of town, heading north. He walked to the livery, threw a saddle on Star, and headed out, staying to the high country, which oftentimes ran parallel to the road, but high up. He trailed the buggy to within a few miles of Hell's Creek and watched as Big Max Huggins rode out to meet it. Max and the driver of the buggy sat for a long time on a log, talking. Huggins, with one big arm around the other person's shoulder. That night, he told Sally about it.
Things are just never what they seem to be, are they, honey?
This thing isn't, that's for sure. Problem is, I don't know what to do about it. No laws have been broken. The only thing broken will be the faith of the townspeople.
And a broken heart.
Yeah, if they don't already know about it.
I hadn't thought about that. Oh, Smoke, I just can't believe that. Just thinking about it makes me sick.
I'll have to face one or the other pretty soon, I reckon. And I'm not looking forward to that. Well, let's get off of it. How's the bank coming along?
I just got word this morning. It'll be open for business next Monday morning. The money will be coming in day after tomorrow, and it will be heavily guarded.
How much money?
Here's the telegraph.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, and that will be too good an opportunity for Max to pass up.
I wish you and Victoria would get out of here, Sally. The two of you can go on back to the Sugarloaf.
No, I'm staying. We'll leave together, Smoke.
Yeah, I thought you'd say that. Anyway, I'd say I have 2 weeks before Max hits us. Maybe three, but no longer. I think those rumors the snitch carried to him about those old warrants back east has him spooked. And I'm told that Red Malone is getting jumpy, too. Well, I'm going to go prowl the town for a while. I just want to check around.
I'm going to read. If you're late, I'll leave the lamp low.
Smoke walked through the town. The Grand Hotel was full, but with the coming of the paper, a doctor, two lawyers, and half a dozen new businesses, the town was experiencing a growth unseen since its inception. Pete Akins walked up and joined Smoke.
Evening, Pete. See anything?
Yeah. Horse tied out of sight down by the creek. I never seen the brand before. Fancy rigging, rifle's gone from the boot. We might have us a back shooter in town.
You tell the others.
Going to now.
Okay. Watch yourself.
Smoke stepped back into the shadows created by the storefront and lifted his eyes, inspecting the rooftops of the buildings across the street. He freed his .44s and slipped into an alleyway, walking around behind the buildings. He paused at the alley's end, staying close to the hotel's outside wall. He listened, all senses working overtime. He angled around Martha's dress shop and came out behind the cafe. A slight movement ahead of him flattened Smoke against the back of the cafe, eyes searching the darkness. He caught a faint glint of moonlight off what appeared to be the barrel of a carbine, short barrel for easier handling. Smoke waited, muscles tensed. The man behind the gun stepped away from the building, and for an instant, Smoke could see his face. It was no one he'd ever seen before. The man was clean-shaven, his clothing dark and neat. The man took a step, a silent one. Slowly, Smoke knelt down, carefully stretching out on the cool ground to offer the man less of a target.
You looking for me, partner?
The man turned. Smoke's slug hit the rifle and tore it from the man's hand. The gunman ran back into the darkness.
Smoke!
I'm all right, Sal. Stay undercover. I'm thinking this man's not alone. Damn! I was right.
Smoke caught the muzzle flashes of one of the guns. It came from the roof of the saddle shop. Smoke took aim. Suddenly, an unknown gun hand stepped out of his hiding place behind Smoke and leveled his pistol. Jim and Sal fired as one. Smoke came up on his feet behind a tree.
Come on, I know there's another one of you. There!
He's down, Smoke!
I'm coming over! You know him?
Hell, that's Blanchard. I thought he was in prison down in New Mexico.
You're not gonna make it, Blanchard. Go out clean for once in your life. Who hired you?
Huggins from Overton. Hell's Creek pulled us up from Utah. We rode the train, me and Dixon. He rode over from Idaho.
D. Mansfield?
Yeah.
That his horse down by the creek?
Yeah. Getting cold. And I can't move my hands.
Excuse me.
Dr. Turner pushed through the crowd and knelt down looking at the man. It was a quick look. Blanchard was dead.
Mr. Jensen, when is this carnage going to end?
Whenever Red Malone and Max Huggins call it off.
Okay, folks. Show's over. Let's break it up.
No, it isn't, Smoke. Melvin Malone just rode into town. He's calling you out, Smoke.
Damn. I knew that kid would cut his wolf loose someday. Thanks, Tom.
Sal, clear the streets.
Here now. I demand an end to this barbaric practice of justice at the point of a gun. Just arrest him, Marshal. You don't have to kill him. You have the manpower to overwhelm him.
You demand, Robert? Who in the hell do you think you are anyway? Overwhelm him? How? He's come to kill, Robert, not talk. He'll shoot anyone who tries to disarm him.
You don't know that, Smoke. That's just conjecture on your part. Law and order must prevail out here. It's past time.
Why don't you go and disarm him then, Doctor?
I'm not a lawman. That's your job.
Yeah, right. I think that was the reason I hung up a badge the last time I wore one.
Smoke turned his back to the doctor and walked away, his deputies moving with him, the crowd following along.
He's in the saloon. You gonna kill the punk, Smoke?
I hope not.
No, there might not be any other way, Smoke.
I know, but I can always hope.
As soon as Smoke walked into the saloon, the waitresses moved off to one side. The long bar was already void of customers. Only Melvin stood there, a whiskey bottle in front of him, his right hand close to the butt of his Colt.
Come on in, Jensen. I'll buy you a drink.
You are banned from this town, Melvin. Leave now, and I won't toss you in jail.
You'll never toss me in jail again, Jensen. Me or anyone else, for that matter.
Don't be a fool. I've faced 100 young hotshots like you. They're all dead, boy. Dead. Or crippled.
You ain't never seen me draw.
Think of your father, your sister. Think what your dying is gonna do to them.
Oh, you got it all wrong, Jensen. You're the one that's gonna be pushing up flowers, not me.
Listen to me, boy. You...
Shut up! You're a coward, Jensen. You're afraid to draw on me.
Well, I tried, boy. Nobody can say I didn't try.
And that's all you're gonna do in this fight. Try to beat me. You've had a long run, Jensen. Now it's over. Now my pa can stop worrying about his back trail and we can get on with our lives.
All but one of you.
Huh?
Your life is over.
Melvin's hands flashed to his gun. Melvin's slug blew a hole in the barroom floor. Smoke's first shot took the young gunslinger in the belly, but he still stood. Melvin's second shot grazed Smoke's shoulder, burning a hole in his shirt and searing his flesh. Smoke's slug turned Melvin, but he still would not go down. Melvin lifted his left-hand Colt, clearly weakening. Smoke didn't let up. Smoke stepped through the swirl of gun smoke and walked over to the young man.
I beat Black Jack Simmons and Ted Navarro. Holland didn't even... clear leather against me.
They were fast. I'm faster.
Oh, shit.
Jim, get word to Red that he can come in and take his boy home. Just Red. Anybody else of the Lightning brand tries to enter this town, I'll toss him in jail or leave him in the dust.
The young deputy left the barroom.
Knowing Red, he just might come busting up here with all his hands, figuring to burn down the town.
If he does, it'll be the last thing he'll ever do. Everybody,
I want 10 men on guard at all times tonight. Take some water and biscuits with you when you go to the rooftops. Go home and get your rifles. All stores are going to be shut down tomorrow.
Smoke was up long before dawn. He walked out onto the silent boardwalks and leaned against a support pole. Jim had arrived back in town after delivering the news. Smoke sent the man off to bed and then rolled a cigarette, waiting for the arrival of Red Malone. Just at dawn, a rider came in from the south end of town. It was Red, and he had come alone. Red reined up and stared at Smoke through the gray light of dawn. The man's face was hard and uncompromising.
I come to get my boy, Jensen.
He's over at the Undertaker's, Red.
I'll get my boy buried proper, Jensen. And then you and me, we'll settle this.
Red, your boy come to me looking for trouble. A couple of dozen men heard me practically beg him not to draw. He was a grown man and he made his choice. He tossed the dice and threw craps. Bury your boy and put the hate out your heart.
Point me to my boy.
Just down there, Red.
Red rode slowly up the street toward the Undertaker's. A few minutes later, Melvin was tied across the saddle of his pony, the horse carrying its owner for the last time.
I'll be back, Jensen.
I'll be here, Red.
Smoke knew what came next. Red was going to work himself up into a murderous rage and gather all his hands and attack the town. He would get with Max Huggins and work it all out. Max and his men would attack from the north, Red and his bunch from the south. And Smoke knew that the town was braced for it. After breakfast, he went to see Dr. Robert Turner.
Morning, Doc.
If you're hurt, I'll treat you, Smoke. I'd do that for any man. But other than that, you are not welcome in this house.
I see. Does that include my wife, too?
Well, Sally is welcome here anytime, of course.
You just don't like my barbaric ways, is that it, Doc?
Something like that, yes. All this killing is quite unnecessary, you know.
No, I don't know that, Doc. What am I supposed to do when a man confronts me with a gun? Kiss him?
What you are doing is stupid, primitive, and barbaric.
Victoria home?
No, she went shopping.
That's good, because I just don't believe she knows the game you're playing.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jensen.
You're a liar.
Now, I'm no gun hand, Smoke, and I certainly can't whip you with my fists, so I'm not even going to try. Now, what's on your mind?
Your brother, Max Huggins.
Oh, come inside. Please, sit. How did you find out about Max?
By looking at the two of you and guessing. I knew someone had been leaking information out of town, so I followed you one day. Now then, what do you intend to do about this?
Victoria doesn't know, Smoke.
Neither Sally nor I believe she was a part of it.
How many people know?
Me and Sally. Judge Garrison.
When the townspeople find out, I guess I'm through in Barlow, right?
I imagine so. You and Victoria. You're not cut out for this kind of life, Robert. The West is not for people like you. Women wear gingham out here, not lace. Coming up here from Trains End, me and Sally took our baths in creeks. I can't work up a picture in my mind of you and Victoria doing that. Killings are common out here, Robert. Not as common as they used to be, but people will still travel 100 miles to see a good hanging.
Barbaric, I agree.
And then there's a little matter of Max Huggins to take into consideration.
Max is my brother, can't you understand that?
He's also a thief, a rapist, a murderer, and God only knows what else. And accept this, Doc. I intend to kill him.
Judge, jury, and executioner, right, Smoke?
Sometimes that's the way it has to be, Robert. And you're no better than Max, are you, Robert?
What do you mean by that?
There was no old rancher that you befriended back in the city, was there, Robert?
The doctor's silence gave Smoke his reply.
I suspected as much. Max killed that rancher and then had the letter forged. The letter you showed your wife.
Max never said and I never asked.
Didn't you even care?
Yes! Yes, I cared. I came out here in the hopes of changing my brother, making him see that what he was doing was wrong, evil. Our parents died 2 years ago, 4 months apart. They left quite a sizable estate. It all came to me. Of course, they had written Max out of the will years before. I even offered Max half of the estate.
Sally thought you were a poor, struggling doctor.
Hardly. I assure you, I have plenty of money.
And Max told you he would change his evil ways and become a fine, upstanding citizen.
Yes, he did, and I believed him.
All that crap you told Victoria, that she wrote to Sally, about Lisa and Victoria being lusted after by Max, all that was a lie.
No, no, it wasn't. He told me he wanted my wife, and he told me he would use Lisa to have her.
And you still defend this sorry SOB. Jesus Christ, Robert. What have you got between your ears, mush?
I owe him my life, Smoke. 3 times I owe him, and I owe him my family fortune.
You want to explain that?
A gang of thugs set on me when I was a boy. They had knives. Max whipped him. Every one of them. Later, when I got a woman in a family way, her father had me cornered with a gun. Max killed him.
You're a real swell fella, Robert. You know that?
Oh, please. She was just trash. So was her father.
You did see the child through school, I hope.
Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. I told you she was trash. Anyway, she moved away. I have no idea where she and that brat might be.
Uh-huh. Go on, Robert. It's such a heart-rending tale.
The third time Max saved my life, I was in college. He was on the run from the law. Had been for years. But he was back east at the time. I had a rather unpleasant experience with a brother.
You have another brother?
Oh, no. No, this was a fraternity brother at school.
What the hell is that? Never mind. I don't want to know.
I beat the young man quite severely about the head with a brick. It was over a woman, of course. Max finished him off for me. Good old Max.
Smoke was jarred right down to his boots. The good doctor, Robert Turner, was crazy. Flat out insane.
Finished him off. What do you mean, Robert?
Killed him, of course. Oh, the young man was dying anyway. Max just took the brick and beat his head in with it. I was appalled, of course. I mean, I abhor violence of any kind.
I can see that.
It was in the dead of winter, and my heavens, but it was cold. Max took the body and threw it in the river after tying several heavy objects to it. We're brothers, you know. Brothers help each other.
Of course.
It was just after that when my father got into his, predicament. And Max took care of that, too. Then he headed west. They always kept in touch with me, though. We're brothers, know that?
How did he take care of your father's, troubles?
Killed my father's mistress. She was attempting to blackmail father. Now, that would have done poor Mom in if she ever found out about it.
I'm sure it would have, Robert.
Well, a good fellow. I certainly am glad we had this little chat. I feel better, so much better now that I realize what an understanding man you are. But I must go see my patients now. They need me, you know? Such a nice feeling to be wanted. I'll just get my bag.
This man is nuts and very dangerous.
Already, I'll see you out. Now do tell your wonderful wife I said hello.
Oh, sure.
Get up!
Smoke was sitting on the porch, mulling the conversation over when Vicky strolled up.
Oh, hello, Smoke.
Morning, Vicky.
Are you waiting for Robert?
No, I had a long chat with Robert. He just left. I was sitting here, sort of catching my breath after our conversation.
Whatever in the world do you mean, Smoke?
Our conversation got a little deep for me, medical stuff.
Oh, are you ill? Is Sally all right?
Both of us are fine. Where is Lisa?
Playing with a friend. Don't worry. The kids are well guarded.
Vicky, could I ask you some questions without you getting angry?
Why, of course. It's Robert, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, he's a good man, I believe. But a very strange man at times. And please, don't think I'm criticizing him or talking behind his back. I've tried to discuss this with him. It's almost as though he's several different people in one body. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Vicky, I do.
I've been worried about him ever since we came out here. My goodness, I haven't even told this to Sally. You're easy to talk to, Smoke.
Has his, behavior been sort of odd, Vicky?
Why, yes, that's it. You've noticed it too?
Oh, yeah, I sure have. He sort of, rambled, I guess you'd call it, while talking with me.
Vicky stared at Smoke for a moment, then walked to the edge of the porch. She stood there looking at the mountains in the distance.
I don't know what to do, Smoke. I don't have a penny of my own money. I'm totally dependent upon Robert. He has... violent mood changes. I'm frightened of him. And so is Lisa. I know he used to meet Max Huggins in town. I thought that very odd, and I have no idea what they discussed, except me.
And Lisa.
Yes. Max came to the ranch lots of times. Robert would laugh and joke with him, usually outside, away from me, but sometimes in the living room. I never could understand the... well, the... call it a bond between them.
They're brothers, Victoria.
They're... Oh.
Vicky?
Smoke spotted a passing boy.
Son! Go run to the hotel. Get Sally Jensen. Then go to my office and tell my deputies to get over here now.
The boy took off like he had rockets on his feet. He placed her on the couch in the living room. A few minutes later, Sally ran in.
Smoke! What's happened?
She fainted after I told her that Max Huggins and Robert were brothers.
I'm surprised she didn't have a heart attack. Let me take care of her. You go wait outside for your deputies.
So what's up, Smoke?
I got it confirmed. Robert Turner is the brother of Max Huggins. His wife just found out. Sally's taking care of her now. And he ain't right in the head no way.
Well, here comes the judge. Maybe he can help out.
Smoke! Benson's boy came and got me. Told me Vicky's been hurt.
Well, that was good thinking on his part. But Vicky's not hurt. Physically, anyway.
What? Did that Dr. Turner do something to her?
In a way. Judge, I've got reason to believe Dr. Turner's mentally ill. Can you get Robert declared insane?
Well, you show me proof. All I have to do is sign my name to a piece of paper. He'll be taken to the state hospital for the insane.
One of Joe Walsh's hands, Curly, rode up and dismounted.
Say, Smoke, I just seen Dr. Turner heading north towards Hell's Creek. He was putting a whip to that horse of his. He was shouting and cussing as he drove. Damn near ran me down. I hollered and asked him what was the matter. He said he had to get to his brother. What brother's he talking about? I didn't know he had any kin out here.
We just found out that he and Max Huggins are brothers.
He... holy crap.
That why you think he's insane?
That and what he was telling me. Him and his brother are responsible for a number of murders back east. Three he told me about. And he didn't seem the least bit remorseful. Seemed almost proud of letting his brother do it. Get all the legal action going that needs to be done, Judge. Committing Robert and seeing to it that his estate is in Vicky's hands.
Easily done, Smoke. I'll have the paperwork done in an hour and wire his banks back east. You get into a strong box of files and find out where and how much. Have the papers sent to me.
Sure, thanks.
Smoke walked back into the house. Sally had opened Victoria's bodice and placed a cool cloth on the woman's head. Her eyes were open now, and she seemed alert. Smoke pulled a chair up close to the couch.
Victoria, how are you feeling?
I'm all right.
I'm sorry, Vicky, but I just didn't know how else to tell you.
It's all right, Smoke. I'm glad you did. It answers a lot of questions I had in my mind. Now I can see the family resemblance.
He's on his way to Max right now. Judge Garrison is going to have him committed, and we're going to get Robert's estate in your hands. I need to know where he keeps his documents, bank books, and so forth.
Oh, well, I'll show you. Huh. Still a little woozy.
You'd best lay back down.
No. If I'm to be a Western woman, I've got to learn to be strong.
I thought you were leaving, heading back east.
I'm staying. I want my daughter to be raised out here. The town needs another school teacher, and... that is what I was trained to be.
Hey, Smoke, I sent... oh, man, oh, day. Oh, so sorry.
Sal took one look at Vicky's open bodice and turned his back to the woman, facing the wall.
Yeah, I sent Pete over to fetch your girl, ma'am. They'll be along directly.
Oh, thank you, mister.
Just Sal, ma'am.
Vicky buttoned up her bodice.
You may turn around now, Sal.
Thank you. Yeah, I felt sort of stupid standing here, talking to a wall.
That was very kind of you, thinking of Lisa.
It wasn't nothing, ma'am.
It is to me, I assure you. Well, I have to assume that Robert is not coming back. So I think what I'll do is this. If you will all leave me alone for a time, Sally, will you look after Lisa for a few minutes? Good. Thank you. I'll have myself a good cry and then start putting my life back in order.
Man ought to be horsewhipped leaving a good woman like that one back yonder.
Sally looked at Smoke and winked at him.
Sal, what are your plans when we leave here?
Why, I don't rightly know, ma'am. Why do you ask?
Well, the county is going to need a sheriff, and you've been a pretty fine deputy. How's about I recommend you to Judge Garrison? Are you interested?
Sure, but how about these boys?
Sal jerked his thumb at Pete and Jim.
Well, I think Pete is going to try his hand at ranching, seeing as how he's been tippy-toeing around the Widow Feckles, the both of them making goo-goo eyes at each other.
Pete's face suddenly turned beet red.
I just remembered something. I gotta go see about my horse.
Pete walked across the street in a hurry.
How about you, Jim?
Oh, I like this deputy sheriffing. Sure beats 30 a month and found, sleeping in drafty bunkhouses. It's fine with me, Sal.
Good. It's settled then. Judge Garrison has papers declaring the election of Cartwright to have been illegal, and the man has no more authority. He's going to post election notices starting tomorrow, and you're going to be the one and only candidate.
But what are you going to do?
Retire from law enforcement and hang around to see the fun. A badge is too restrictive for me, Sal. I like room to roam.
You're going to take the fight to them.
Why, Sal, would I do something like that?
Judge Garrison did what, Cartwright?
What I just said, Max. Declared my election as sheriff illegal, and then they had an election down to Barlow yesterday, and Sal's the new sheriff.
He can't do that. We weren't advised of any election.
Oh, yes, we were. On his paper. One of the boys found this tacked to a tree just outside of town.
Hell, you can't read it without a goddamn magnifying glass.
That's sure enough the truth, and that's what I done, too. It's a legal paper, telling the citizens of Hell's Creek about the election.
Damn it. Damn it! Well, you can still be town marshal of Hell's Creek.
Oh, well, big deal. We got no protection now, Max. We don't know what's going on in Barlow now that your brother moved in with you. And boys, it's getting right edgy.
About what, Paul?
They want to hit the town now and get out. The bank's in place, ain't it?
Not yet. Monday morning is still the target date. We'll double our money if we wait until everybody there has dug up the money they've buried or pulled it out of mattress ticks. Go tell the boys to calm down.
Yeah, okay.
Cartwright left, and Max turned in his chair, looking out his office window. His main concern right now was what he was going to do with Robert. His younger brother was getting unpredictable. He was like a goose, waking up in a new world every morning. Most of the time he was lucid, but other times he was crazy as a loon. Of course, he had always known his brother was nuts, walking a very fine line between genius, which he seemed to be, and insanity, which he certainly was.
But he's family. And family looks out for each other. Best they can, anyway.
Victoria soon signed papers making her the executor over Robert Turner's estate, thus ensuring that she and Lisa would not be thrust penniless into the world. Sal became the officially elected and legal sheriff of the county, and Smoke turned in his badge. While Smoke respected the law, he was also well aware that there were hard limits placed upon it when dealing with the lawless. As a private citizen, he had shed himself of those limits. Now he could meet Max Huggins and Red Malone on equal footing. Smoke bought supplies at Marbley's General Store, including a sack of dynamite, and made ready to hit the trail. In addition to his .44 Winchester, he carried a Sharps 56 and another saddle boot. 2 days after the election, Smoke was ready to go. Star was fully rested. Big Black was bred for the trails and was growing impatient with all this inactivity.
Bye, honey. I won't ask how long you'll be gone.
2 or 3 days this time around. I'll be back in time to see the bank open.
Smoke headed north toward Hell's Creek to see what mischief he could get into. He'd heard rumors that Big Max Huggins thought himself to be unbeatable as a bare-knuckle fighter. Smoke knew that the man could be formidable, just his size would make him dangerous. Smoke also knew that many big men rarely knew much about the finesse of fighting, depending mostly on their strength and bulk to overwhelm their opponents. The trick would be to catch Big Max by himself. Smoke didn't trust anyone left in Hell's Creek not to shoot him after he whipped Max, and he knew he could whip him. He'd take some cuts and bruises doing so, because Max was a huge and powerful man. But Smoke had whipped men just as big and just as tough. Smoke stayed off the road, keeping to the mountain trails, enjoying the aloneness of it all. He rested and ate an early lunch above a peaceful valley that was exploding with summer colors. Deer fed below him, and once he spotted a grizzly ambling along, eating berries and overturning logs, looking for grubs. Squirrels chattered and birds sang their joyful songs all around him. Then suddenly the deer below him raced away. The grizzly reared up his hind legs, testing the air, and dropped down to all fours and skedaddled back into the timber. Smoke had picked a very secure position to noon with Star well hidden. He didn't move now. Movement would attract attention faster than noise. Soon, the horsemen came into view, about a dozen of them riding through the valley. Smoke moved in, getting his field glasses out of his saddlebags and focusing in on the men, being careful not to let the sun glint off the lenses. He knew some of them, or at least had seen them before. They were hired guns, hired by Max Huggins. The men were heavily armed, carrying their rifles across the saddle horns. Smoke could see where many of them had shoved extra six-shooters behind their belts. The route they were taking would lead them straight to the farm complex of Brown and Gatewood and the others. The men reached into their back pockets and pulled out hoods. They reined up and slipped the hoods over their faces. They were about 3 miles from the farm complex. No man elects to wear a hood over his face unless he's up to no good. But still, Smoke held his fire. Smoke rode higher into the timber and got ahead of the gunslingers. On a ridge overlooking the valley where Brown and the others were rebuilding, Smoke found himself a good spot. Smoke got into position. He didn't have long to wait. The raiders came at a gallop, riding hard and heading straight for Brown's farm, guns at hand.
That was a gunshot!
It was. Get the guns, Ellie. They just bought themselves a world of hurt.
Brown, his wife, and their two sons grabbed their rifles, getting behind cover.
Shoot! Shoot now! Again!
They're turning around!
All right! Good shooting, boys!
As the Brown family celebrated their victory, the outlaws turned and headed back north. Between Smoke shot and the Browns' barrage, they had lost 5 out of 12, and that had not been in their plans. Smoke watched the hooded raiders riding in a panic now, not knowing how many riflemen were hidden along the ridges.
Thanks, Brown. They're heading right for me.
Smoke lifted the sharps and sighted in. The remaining outlaws started to scatter, and soon they were gone. Smoke rode down to see if any of the outlaws on the ground were still alive. Two of them were.
Now, let's see what we've got under these hoods. Well, hello, Sid. Looks like you've just got a flesh wound. You'll live. But your pal here? Bought the farm.
Yeah. Smoke? I should have known you had a hand in this. Thank you for that warning shot.
Warning shot? I shot the man in front right out of his saddle.
How'd you know?
I didn't. I was having lunch on the ridges when you crud came riding along.
What are you gonna do with me?
Well, you get on my nerves and I might just decide to hang you.
Well, that ain't legal. I got a right to a fair trial.
Well, ain't that something now? They come up here attacking us and damned if he ain't hollering about his right to a fair trial. I swear I don't know where our system of justice is taking us.
Wait a few years. I guarantee you it'll get worse.
Smoke helped gather up the weapons from the dead raiders. Brown and the others in the farming complex now had enough weapons and ammo to stand off any type of attack, major or minor.
Man, they got their nerve coming back here.
And we'll keep coming back. We'll keep coming until all you hog farmers are dead.
You're wrong, Sid. Take a look at these men around you, hombre. Even without my guns, they'd have stopped the attack. I don't know whose idea this was, but I doubt it was Max's.
Sid York glared at Smoke, but kept his mouth closed.
Can you read and write, punk?
Huh?
You heard me. Can you read and write?
No, I never learned how, so what?
Smoke walked to his horse, dug in the saddlebags, and found a scrap of paper and the stub of a pencil.
I'm writing a message for Big Max. You give it to him, and to him alone. There you go. I'll know if you showed it to anyone else. You understand?
What the hell? You turning me loose?
Yeah, with a piece of advice. Get gone from this county. Give the note to Max and then saddle your fresh horse, get your kit together, and haul your ashes out of Hell's Creek. We know Max and Red are going to attack the town. That is, if the old arrest warrants on his head don't catch up with him first, and they might. The town is ready for the attack, hombre. Ready and waiting 24 hours a day. We know the bank is tempting. But don't try it. Don't ride in here with them. The townspeople will shoot you into bloody rags. There's nigh on to 600 people in and around Barlow now. 600! And there are guards standing watch around the clock, ready to give the call. It's a death trap waiting for you. Now go, Sid. Get on the horse there and get. We've got your pistols and rifle, so don't try anything. Ride! And give that note to Max.
I'll do that. Yeah.
Smoke? There ain't close to 600 people in Barlow.
And we don't have any arrest warrants on Max or Red. But he don't know that. Soon, all of Hell's Creek will think we do. Before you boys bury that crud, go through their pockets and take whatever money you find. You earned it.
Don't seem right, taking money from the dead.
Well, they won't need it. Near as I can figure out from reading the Bible, there ain't no honky-tonks in hell.
Hi, boss.
Sid! I heard about what happened. I thought you died, too.
No, just a flesh wound. Stings, though. Smoke let me go.
He let you go? Why?
He told me to give you this.
What the hell?
Max, you stupid horse-faced piece of hog shit. Meet me tomorrow at the west side of the Swan Range by the creek. No guns. I'm gonna stomp your face in with fists and boots. Come alone if you have the guts, which you probably don't have, being the coward that you are.
God damn!
That son of a bitch!
Big Max let his temper rage for a few moments, then began to calm himself. He sat back down behind his desk and smiled. Max had killed men with his fists before and felt very confident that he would do the same with Smoke Jensen. Max folded his ham-like hands behind his head and leaned back in his chair.
How you gonna play it?
Straight. Jensen says I don't have the courage to meet him alone. Well, I'll show that two-bit gunfighter a thing or two about courage. I know the place he's talking about. On the flats, just above the creek. Good level place for a fight. I'll go in alone, but I'll be armed. To do otherwise would be foolish. Once there, we'll shuck our guns, each in plain sight of the other. Then, I will beat Smoke Jensen to death with my fists.
Smoke camped on the flats. On the afternoon before the fight, if Max showed up, and Smoke felt confident he would, Smoke prowled the area, picking up and throwing away every stick and rock he could find. He walked the area a dozen times, looking for holes in the ground that might trip a man. He memorized the natural arena. Then, sure he had everything humanly possible done, he cooked his supper and made his coffee. He rolled into his blankets just after dark and went to sleep with a smile on his lips. What he was doing, he knew, was foolish. It was male pride at its worst. But when two bulls are grazing in the same pasture, one is going to be dominant over the other. That was just nature's way. And Smoke had been raised too close to the earth to attempt to alter nature's way. The fight would really accomplish nothing of substance. Smoke knew it. And Max probably knew it too. If he didn't, then the man was a fool. Smoke knew that what he ought to do was kill Max Huggins just as soon as the man stepped down from the saddle. But that wasn't his way, and Max probably realized it. If Max came, and came alone, then he was going to follow the same rules. It promised to be a very interesting fight. Smoke was up at dawn, boiling his coffee and frying his bacon. He ate lightly. He didn't want to fight on a full stomach. At full light, he looked out over the flats, and far in the distance, he saw a lone rider approaching. From the size of the man, he knew it had to be Max Huggins. He lifted his field glasses and scanned the area all around Max to the rear and both sides. He could pick up no signs of outriders. Big Max was coming in alone.